Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Live from a fog-socked-in city. You got to be careful when you say certain things. Very foggy out there. Very, 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 very foggy. And it'll burn off, won't it? Steve, what do we know about the fog? Should I be concerned?
It's looking a little better now, actually.
Okay, we're going to be fine.
Steve's in a conference with Vic Vaughn right now.
Not paying attention to the show. No, it's all right.
It's okay.
I'm sure it's important.
We're talking about news, a news crop.
Oh, sure.
Yes, definitely. Very important stuff.
Here's what's coming up today. Discussion of Chelsea's wedding dress. Sounds like one of those like summertime beach novels you'd read. Chelsea's wedding dress.
This one could end me. Just so you know, this could be the.
The final.
Wait, you haven't seen her in it, have you?
No, I have not, Mary.
Okay,
that is not allowed.
Okay, good. Good.
So she believes in all that stuff. I mean, she should. I'm just saying she does.
It sounded like you don't think she.
No,
should.
No, no, I do.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, she does believe in that. I believe in that.
And
I'm a romantic guy, Steve.
You really are. It makes the wedding night so much more special.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the night before the wedding, you're going to have to sleep somewhere else.
Yep.
We have discussed that. I'm looking forward to that evening.
Mm-hmm. Need a place?
Steve's house.
Probably okay.
Kid of the week coming up. Blackhawks convention passes to be given away. Edzo, Eddie Olczyk later on what the Blackhawks might do in a draft. And later on, it's kind of cool. The Illinois Bar Association Orchestra. Lawyers with musical talent. We're going to play live on the show.
Wow.
Coming up later on.
Who would have thought?
All right.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, top six and six. Let's do it right now.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, former Chicago Bear Josh McCown, who played for 10 different teams and has one of the best backup career stories ever because he's made millions. He's not injured. He's retiring and will probably get an analyst job somewhere if he wants it, maybe an assistant coach's job. It's a pretty good story for Josh McCown. 17 years, 10 different teams, hanging it up after that 17-year career. So
39 years old.
Do you realize how much better of a quarterback Josh McCown was than Jay Cutler when he was here? Josh McCown was throwing touchdown after touchdown and no interceptions, and nobody would believe that McCown was better than Cutler. There was one guy.
You?
That's right, me.
You?
That's me. Okay. I was like, this guy's better than Cutty. Then you talk to like former Bears, then they were like, we don't want Cutler to come back from this injury. This guy's incredible. Like, oh, you got to play Cutler. You got to play Cutler.
I think incredible might be a stretch. If he was incredible, wouldn't he have had a bigger career?
Well, he blasted in the league for 17 seasons.
No, but I mean, he would have been a starter somewhere.
He got to start. He got his opportunity.
Would have been a starter who lasted. You described him as incredible.
Well, he never got injured, did he? Yeah, or did he?
He had some injuries along the way.
My point is, this is a good career.
It was, okay, incredible was an overstatement. Fair enough, Steve, but he was better than Jay Cutler.
Okay.
I mean, just,
it's just hurtful that you would say that with Jay Cutler listening in Nashville, as he does each morning.
I don't know why I'm still bothered by Jay Cutler, but I'm still bothered by Jay Cutler. Josh McCown was better than Jay Cutler.
I hear he was incredible.
He was incredible, damn it.
But Jay Cutler's a good actor, as Mary Sandberg
tremendous.
Would attest to on his show.
White Sox heading to Wrigley today. Eloy Jimenez will make his Wrigley Field debut. And he's expected to hit four over the roofs of the rooftops. Is that right? That's what you're planning on?
I actually heard six. Steve, this one is expected to go extra innings in a slugfest. Ivan Nova and Cole Hamels on the mound. You know, it's going to be the greatest trade in Chicago White Sox history. Dylan Cease is going to win the Cy Young, and Eloy Jimenez is going to turn into Babe Ruth.
Who are the starters tonight?
Cole Hamels and Ivan Nova.
When's Giolito pitching?
Tomorrow. That would be Giolito and John Lester. Yeah. Giolito beat the Cubs at Wrigley last year.
Okay.
He walked seven guys, but he beat the Cubs.
Yeah. Well, he's better this year. Next. President Trump at it again. Last night, tweeting late that next week he will start ordering the roundup of millions of illegals in country. There's somewhere between 15 and 20 million, maybe 25 million undocumented immigrants in this country, illegals, whatever label you'd like to throw out there. And the president says they're going to round them up and send them home, including children.
I'm sure he will.
I'm sure that'll be cheap, right? That won't be expensive at all.
And no, there'll be no mistakes. No one will get shot in the process. You know, it'll be perfectly fine. It'll run smooth. You know, I have a psychological explanation for a good part of this. Stephen Miller, the little weasel who, you know, kind of lurks in the background, kind of Trump's mini-me without the toupee. He and Trump share one thing that they both affects all of their decisions. They don't have any friends. They don't have any friends in life. Donald Trump has no best pal in 35 to 40 years of being a well-known name in this country to the president of the United States. Have you ever heard of anybody come forward and go, hey, Trumpster and I hung out as kids, we hung out as adults, we're tight, we've always been tight.
I hear that Huckabee Sanders is going to be really tight with him after she goes back.
Well, my point is, if you have zero male friends as a grown man, then you might respond overly favorably to any praise whatsoever, which, of course, he does. Kim Jong-un is his friend.
Oh.
And Vladimir Putin is his friend.
Pence.
Mike Pence is his caddy. Yeah. And who's the little weasel I mentioned? His little assistant? His little mini-me?
Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller's college roommates and college friends can't stand him. Stephen Miller's family says he's a terrible person. This is all documented. None of that stuff's made up. And again, if you have zero friends and you're an unlikable human being, you're going to have these sorts of issues.
Yeah, every guy needs a buddy to say, you know what, that tie's too long.
Exactly.
Cut your hair.
Yes.
Everybody needs
stop
that person.
Stop saying stupid stuff.
Right. His mother loved him.
Calm down. Somebody needs to pull him aside and say, calm down.
Next. For the first time, the Pride flag is flying above the Illinois Capitol building. Governor Pritzker and every Illinoisan should be proud of who they are. Governor Pritzker said every Illinoisan should be proud of who they are, who they love, and how they identify. Next, President Trump, more in the news, ordered an additional 1,000 troops to the Middle East after Tehran announced it would soon violate part of the 2015 nuclear deal. That should be good. Good to see this developing the way it is. Next. The Wiener Circle in Lincoln Park is staying put. The building was put up for sale last year, but the owners were able to buy it, so the property is now in the hands of developers. So the Wiener Circle will not close? Is that right?
Apparently so. I can't believe it. That is some serious, serious prime real estate right there, and they're selling hamburgers and hot dogs? I mean, I love it, but I just thought that would go the way of bye-bye.
Speaking of food, the Chicago Tribune tackled one of the toughest topics in the world. Who makes the best ranch dressing? Do you like ranch dressing?
I do.
I like ranch. It's okay. It's terrible for you.
Who won?
Okay. Number 5, Trader Joe's Organic Ranch.
Oh.
Number 4, Ken Steakhouse Ranch. I don't even know what that is. Number 3, Tuscan Garden Ranch. Number 2, Kraft Classic Ranch. And the number 1, one commenter said this would go perfectly with pizza. It's so good. Hidden Valley, the original ranch.
See, that's just wrong.
It is?
People that put ranch with pizza, I don't want to tell you what to do with your pizza, but you don't think that's wrong?
You'd like them deported.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Ranch is for vegetables.
Marsh, any thoughts on this? Turn your mic on. That might be helpful. Turn your mic on. Yeah. Any thoughts on ranch dressing?
In, champagne.
Yeah.
Yeah? You like any of these?
I do.
You like them all?
I'd like ranch.
Okay, we'll just get you 5 bottles in it. We'll get you all of them.
You know that Ken Steakhouse stuff is really good.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know. I just bought some poppy seed dressing from Ken's. It's really good.
Where do you buy Ken's Steakhouse?
I've got it at the Jewel.
Oh, okay. I've never
heard of it. Brand of... There are so many salad dressings, it's crazy. From Newman's to everybody else. And everybody makes it.
It's like half of an entire row at Jewel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very confusing.
It's the brilliance of Mary that she would know that she bought Ken's Steakhouse Ranch.
Because I was like, what is this stuff? I've never heard of it.
Right.
And it said Ken's Steakhouse. I said, okay. And it was on sale. So I bought it, and it's really good.
Joe, what were you saying? Joe Romano back today.
That ranch, dipping pizza in ranch is a really big thing down at the University of Illinois in Champaign.
Is it?
Did you ever do that, Mary?
Not that I recall. Did they have ranch dressing back then?
Well, it wasn't like invented for a Nobel Prize in the last few years.
We just had French in Thousand Island. That's the only dressing
wasn't
I ever
ranch invented for people who didn't have the guts to you have blue cheese? Wasn't that really the point?
Yeah, it was. All of a sudden, it just came out of nowhere. Now it's everywhere.
I think every girlfriend I've ever had has dipped their pizza in ranch dressing.
Really?
Yep.
By the way, Super Joe, in an unrelated story, we have news for you, and that is that President Obama's daughter, Sasha, is going to go to the University of Michigan.
Yeah, buddy.
It's going to be a Wolverine.
Go Blue.
That's a strong choice.
So
everybody loves the Obama kids, you know? So now they got to just start liking the school that they're going to.
If I said she was going to Ohio State, how would you feel?
Oh, come on, man. Nobody likes them.
620. We'll come back in a second.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Six 26. I've said many times, Bill Cosby is one of the great stand-up comedians of all time. He remains that. He's also a horrible human being who lived a double life and is in prison and should stay in prison for the rest of his life, though his sentence will probably be about 2 or 3 years. Now, what shape will be in if he gets out? He's an old man. Well, that remains to be seen. However, he did feel free to chime in on Father's Day via Twitter. He had someone tweet for him, we're told. Bill Cosby insisted Sunday that a Father's Day tweet be sent on his behalf and said, "Hey, hey, hey, it's America's favorite dad. I know it's late, but to all the dads, it's an honor to be called a father, so let's make today a renewed oath to fulfilling our purpose, strengthening our families and communities." He attached an old video of Cosby talking about slavery and America breaking up the black man's family. Obviously, that tied to said tweet. Cosby was dubbed America's dad, and was, until more than 50 women accused him of sexual abuse and rape. Cosby sits in a Pennsylvania prison for drugging and sexually assaulting specifically Andrea Constan at his home in 2004. He was convicted in 2018, sentenced to 3 to 10 years of jail time. And again, he's likely to get the low end of that unless he does something particularly stupid in prison. He needs to just go away. He needs to not say anything. He needs to not talk. He needs to go away.
Isn't it weird how O.J. Simpson also, you know, tweeted like the same day as Bill Cosby, all of a sudden both of them?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no.
What is his name next? Phil Spector?
I don't know. It's like, please stop.
How is the sentence 3 years? I mean, come on.
Well, it's one particular case. It's not 50.
Okay.
Yeah, they tried him on one.
One case.
I'm not saying the 3 years is right. It seems to me he should be in jail for the rest of his life, period.
Right. I mean,
but why he feels he needs to contribute to the social media dialogue at this point. Sit in his cell, wallow in your shame, which apparently he has none. Apparently he still feels like somehow he's the victim. So, and this whole freaky situation, this freaky fetish thing, whatever he was into, of drugging and knocking women out, and then having sex with them. I mean, good God, that's beyond inexplicable.
Sadistic.
6:28. I'd like to leave you with something a little happier than that, but you know we've got to go to a break, and we'll come back. And oh, Kid of the Week's coming up.
There we go.
At least we got that out of the way first.
All right.
We'll get to that coming up. A cool little invention I stumbled on yesterday, which you might want a piece of. I'll tell you about that later. And we continue on Steve Cochran Show next on 720 WGN. Now, how old are you?
I am 10 years old.
14.
8. 12.
I'm 18.
I'm 10 years old.
What grade are you in or about to go into?
I'm a senior.
8th grade.
Sophomore year.
Just finished junior year, so yes, I'm a senior.
I'm in 4th.
What do you do for fun?
I love art. Art is my favorite.
I do soccer, basketball, cheerleading, tennis, baseball.
I like to play on a trampoline, and I love to make slime.
I act in plays, and I sing all the time.
I also write stories because I love writing.
I play tennis. I also like to play soccer with my best buddy, but I'm not on a team.
Listen, you're a great kid. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I'm still figuring it out.
Pediatric oncologist.
I really want to be a marine biologist.
I'm not really sure yet, but I'm looking into biomechanical engineering.
I want to be an orthodontist because you can help kids feel better out their smile.
Will you run for president someday?
I want to.
Are you excited to be on the show?
Yeah.
You sound super excited. Have you ever been more excited than this?
Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And let's meet today's Kid of the Week. This week's Kid of the Week, Nadia Chaban. Good morning, Nadia.
Good morning.
Are you excited to be on the show?
Yeah.
Nice job, Nadia. One of Nadia's teachers nominated her. Nadia, I understand you're quite the fundraiser.
Yes, I am.
Okay, and the teacher said when you first came to that particular class at 11, you organized a food fundraiser with your father's company, and all the employees participate for Feed My Starving Children. What else have you been involved with?
I've been involved with childhood cancer awareness.
And you've raised money there as well?
Well, what I did was I did a fundraiser in order to purchase gold socks for the entire football league in my local area.
What's this situation where you got a rule change or something where kids could wear pajamas to school?
Oh, that was at my school. This is also for childhood cancer. So the way it works is if you bought a bracelet for $2, then you could wear pajamas to school because pajamas are the battle uniform for children battling cancer.
Oh, well, that's very nice. And comfortable. And
yes, it is.
What did you do for senior citizens?
At my birthday party, I had a bunch of supplies, and everybody sat around the table and made Valentine. And we had over 100 Valentines that I handed out to a bunch of senior citizen shelters.
What a nice person you are. Where's this all come from?
Thank you. Well, my parents raised me to always give to let those less fortunate than myself. So that's what I try to do with...
Talking with Nadia Chaban, this week's Kid of the Week. You got brothers and sisters?
Yes, I've got one younger brother.
Is he equally generous, or is he kind of a little creep?
No, he's a sweet kid. He's not a creep.
I'm just kidding. How old is he?
He's 12.
Oh, well, you guys are pretty close in age. And you get along okay?
We don't really get along, but I still love him a lot.
Well, as you get older, you'll appreciate him more, too, and he'll appreciate you more. Anyway, Nadia, you're a very impressive young lady, and Marcia and Mark and Mary and Steve, they're all impressed as well. Anybody have any questions for Nadia before I bestow upon her the honor of Kid of the Week?
What do you like to do for fun, Nadia?
I like to do Girl Scouts and horseback riding sleep in.
Just like you, Mark.
That's... Right there, Steve.
Each of those things.
I went horseback riding yesterday.
You must be a morning person, Nadia. You have so much energy in the morning.
I am not a morning person at all.
Oh, wow.
Well, you sure sound wide awake.
You do.
Yeah, we're impressed. Anyway, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for being a great kid. Thanks for being Kid of the Week.
And thank you for having me. This is a blast.
Joe, what should I give her? What sort of prizes, Joe Romano, should I give our Kid of the Week friend here?
I think a pizza from Lou Malnati's would do the trick.
Lou Malnati's pizza. Fantastic.
Yes. And a gift card to Apt.
And that, too?
Oh, for sure. Oh,
she deserves
fantastic.
It. You get a gift card to Apt and Lou Malnati's pizza just because you're Kid of the Week. And, of course, the great honor.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you for being here.
All right.
See you later.
Don't hang up. She thanked me for being here.
I got that.
I mean, I got to be here. She didn't have to get up.
Well, you don't have to be, Steve. You're making a choice.
I got a contract.
Boy, you got to get energized after talking to her.
That's a great kid.
Yeah. I'm exhausted.
Plus, I love that. I love that intro that Duffy put together for Chris Duffy, our imaging guy, put together for Kid of the Week, especially the kid at the end. Are you excited to be on the show? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she comes on and goes, yeah, of course, I'm excited.
Yeah, we got to change the promo now.
She definitely needs to be added. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a good kid.
You know, Chris does great work, but I got to say I made that one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, well done.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time when it's good, it's Chris, but this one.
No, your stuff's great. Thanks for doing it.
How about Joe Romano advocating for himself? I did that, Steve.
No, you should take credit for it.
As he should.
I completely take credit for it.
I agree. Yeah. Good job.
I think we should give Joe a raise.
Well, let's not go crazy.
Yeah, especially since he had the day off tomorrow. I mean, come on.
The day off yesterday, you're talking about?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, I take back the race.
I thought maybe
you were
sort of day off psychic. He had the day off tomorrow.
Mary's tired from
I did not get sleep again last night.
Me
I don't
too,
know what's
Mary.
Wrong with me. I need some melatonin or something.
Melatonin, CBD oil?
Yes, whatever Dacmo's prescribed yesterday. I need it.
All right, here's what we'll do. We're coming back, and we're going to talk about the fact that Carmen's getting married, and whether or not he approves of the wedding dress. And I certainly hope you're not involved in that process at all. But knowing you, you've probably stuck your nose in the middle of it, and you're probably in trouble.
I've got thoughts, Steve.
Okay, fine. And then after 7 o'clock, a bunch of things to get to, and along with a brand new feature called Meet Marcia. Marcia's sitting in on the show this week with the band, and for those of you who don't know Marcia, we'll have you on, because she's like Madonna. She has the one show business name thing going.
Madonna.
Marcia! Madonna? Marcia! Oh, that invention I was talking about. I remember a week or so ago that I was running around here looking for a charger for my phone.
Oh, yeah. That was pure bedlam.
Making everybody look for a charger for my phone.
You go into Duffy's office. He always has one.
Right, because Duffy has everything.
If it's not locked.
So I was having lunch with one of my former producers yesterday, a big shot business tycoon named Ron Langner. He wasn't a big shot business tycoon when he worked for me. You know, another Illini, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
ILL.
Yeah. He'd say I, but he's not here.
I know.
So his buddy and attorney showed up, and another good guy. Turns out this guy's an inventor, and he invented something called the Everlet. The Everlet. Think about all the times you've had, and I get nothing for this. Okay, I'm holding this up on the screen. This is not some paid endorsement thing. I just think it's a cool idea. So the Everlet is the wall plate. Think about the wall plate where you plug in your charger for your phone, okay? And your kids or whoever, they steal the charger and plug it in somewhere else. And you can't find your charger. You know, the one place you always want to charge your phone, you can't find it. This is a wall plate that replaces the plate on your wall that has the charger in it. So you've still got the outlet in the bottom, but in the top, you've got a place to plug in the charger. It also is a high-speed charger, and it's got all the various adapters you need for whatever phone you've got. Like, for instance, I've got this Galaxy Note 8. It's got a specific charger because Samsung can charge you more that way. So this thing, I don't know how much it costs, but you can get it. Where's the website for this bad boy? EverletCharge.com. Kevin Harrington, the Shark Tank guy, he heard about this. He's all over it. He's helping make them now.
Did you just fix your life for the good here, Steve? Basically, you don't have to do anything else now.
What are you talking about?
You just seem very excited about this, like everything is solved.
No, but I just think it's a good idea. I think it's a cool idea. Yeah.
Would this be in every outlet in your house, or could it be
in
the future? Yeah.
Sure, if you want it to be.
I could see this happening, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So you plug in the charger, and there's two versions of this. The lesser version is just the wall plate. You thread your own charger through there. Your kids can no longer steal your charger. It becomes part of your wall. You know, and you put it in, obviously, if you want to put it out where everybody's seen, it's fine, but you can also put it in the discrete outlet area. But this way, you'll always know where your phone charger is. A simple fix to one of those daily problems we all have.
You got to stay friends with that guy.
I just appreciate your excitement around this.
Do I seem excited?
Yeah, I think you do. You're smiling. You got this. You get the.
You know, you don't see me smile very often.
You got the apparatus out of the box.
Yeah, get stock in his company, too.
Yeah, they didn't offer.
No.
Apparently, that's all locked up with this Kevin Harrington guy. Like I said, if you have something cool you want to show off to me, I'd be happy to talk about it. But I thought that was a cool idea. And apparently, this guy's working on other stuff, too. Wait till you hear about that. I don't know what he's doing.
Well, this will solve problems in my house.
Well, you know, you would get this because you got a bunch of kids, and he has a bunch of kids, and he said the ideas that he has that he tries to turn into things all come from the ways his children annoy him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different things that kids do that drive him crazy. So, EverletCharge.com if you're interested. Check it out. EverLet. And what are you looking at me like that for? I get nothing. I'm just a nice guy. I'm just a nice guy plugging this product because I thought it was cool.
I just have never seen you bust out a product before. I've known you a long time. This just feels new.
Well, maybe this is a new me. Maybe it's a new me. Every day I'm going to feature something new and exciting on the show. Oh, God. You imagine the time that would take?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Why you want to play this at the wedding, Carm? Your name is Mark. Seems awkward to me.
I don't know if this one's going to make the cut here, Steve. I'm going to be honest. Sounds awful.
The lovely Chelsea has agreed to marry you.
She has.
And you're over your skis. You've admitted that.
I paid her, Steve.
So the wedding is happening this fall.
That's correct.
And where are we on the checklist? Have we gotten to the dress?
We are. Well, that's Chelsea's part of the equation, but yes.
You know me, I spend a lot of time watching Say Yes to the Dress. I spend hours each week watching Say Yes to the Dress.
Well, it's interesting that you bring it up.
I know the word taffeta.
It's a great show.
Well, I got the text last Friday, Steve, that she had said yes to the dress.
No, she did.
Yes. And she's been, you know, seeing a lot of dresses. So this was a big deal that she had made the decision.
Right.
And so I was super excited. She put it on Instagram, you know, had the old champagne bottle on there, the Carm 23, all of it.
So she saw the dress. Did she post the dress?
She didn't post the dress, but she just said that she said yes to the dress.
And got it, a little champagne bottle and all this stuff.
She shouldn't, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. No, I didn't get to see it.
Nobody's supposed to see it, right? Other than your friends?
I guess.
Unless you're on TV?
The moms and all the bridesmaids and everybody else usually sees it.
Right, but I mean, your little club, your little entourage, your Jay-Z entourage.
Mm-hmm. Right, but then Saturday came, and then she said no to the dress.
What?
She said no.
Yeah. What happened?
She's not sure.
She had buyer's remorse. She said yes to the dress, then she said no to the dress.
She said yes.
Second thoughts to that. What's next?
This is killing us at the salon.
Right. Sorry. So she was in, and then she wasn't. So she's having a little bit of trouble with the dress. I don't know how to support Steve. Maybe you have some great advice.
Does she have a backup dress? Here's where you start. You say, listen, you're going to be beautiful in anything you choose.
I've tried that.
But I know, you didn't listen to the rest. But I know how important this decision is. So I want you to take all the time you need. If you can count on whoever her best friend is, you know, take some advice, too, so you don't stress yourself out too much. Because I can't imagine how difficult this decision would be.
That's all nice, but I want this decision made. I want it to be done.
Well, just get two dresses.
And really?
Yeah.
Dresses are expensive. I don't know if we can do that.
Yeah, because you got to order it and have it tailored. Yeah.
Right, and then the friend idea. Now you got another cook.
What's wrong with take all the time you want? You're not involved in the decision. Take all the time you need. I can't imagine how difficult this decision is. But you will look beautiful in whatever you choose.
That's great.
And if I could help you, I would, but I know I can't help you in this process other than to stay out of it. How's that?
That's great, Steve. That's really good. I don't think
you believe that.
No, I do. I actually do believe that, but it doesn't align with what's actually going on in the old body. Like, I'm saying, would you just pick the dress? Just pick...
Because that's one of the hardest things you have to do.
Why is it so hard?
Wasn't that the big moment?
Because you want to look absolutely perfect, and, you know, there's a lot of pictures involved and all that.
You got to remember, dude, this day is not about you.
Okay,
about the bride.
But not going to look perfect.
This is the bride's party, and you might be invited.
Does she have a lot of people that are really influencing her at this decision?
Or getting in her head.
Going with her and getting in her head? Because that's the problem.
Is there one friend in particular that's driving her nuts?
I don't know if it's one friend.
A bridesmaidzilla?
I mean, you know, she's got two sisters. She's got a mom. There's a lot of...
Future mother-in-law problem?
Right. I mean, there's a lot...
What if you're right? Oh, God, you're in trouble now.
And are they going with her to all of these try-ons?
See, Mary's really... She's honing in on this. Yes, they are,
See,
Mary.
She's got to just pick, like, two people. Bring your mom and your maid of honor and get rid of everyone else.
There you
I mean, there's too much. You know, you're too...
Mary, are you available for maid of honor role?
Yeah.
You make decisions.
Yes. I've been the maid of honor, like, two or three times. Yeah, I'll do it.
Now, what about the tux?
I'm not doing the bachelorette party there.
I'm not wearing a tux. No tux.
No tux?
No tux. We're going suit.
Okay, well, that's the
thing now. Everybody's doing suits.
Because because I have a new show that I have sold, Say Yes to the Suit.
Because you can own the suit, yeah.
Yeah, and it's you and another guy. You walk into a place, and you go, Mark Carmen, and they hand you your suit. That's it. And you go, yes, thank you, and you walk out.
I'm done. I'm thinking a nice...
What are your colors? Do you have colors?
I don't have colors. I don't have colors. Who has colors?
Colors?
Well, it's navy or gray or black. I mean, what other choices are there for
suits?
Well,
you could go blue.
Red.
Yeah, said navy.
Just stylish.
No red.
Navy's the big color now.
Navy,
for the guys' suits. Yeah. They're all doing navy.
How do you know this, Mary?
Because I know people that are going through weddings right now.
Going through. I know people going through surgery. I know people going through weddings.
Going through, it's, you know.
Similar.
Stressful experience. It's like buying a house.
So, stay out of the wedding dress,
mm-hmm.
and do as you're told.
Should I wear a suit here tomorrow and you can inspect that as a potential candidate for the wedding?
Sure.
Is that too over the top?
No, it's fine.
I got a couple new suits.
Oh, why don't you? Here's what you should do.
Okay.
Bring both in.
Yeah.
And bring maybe an alternative third look in.
Okay.
And then in the CLTV hour at 9 o'clock on TV, we'll have you do a little fashion show.
We'll just go fashion show tomorrow. Yeah.
Wait, is this just suits you have in your closet? Or are these actually
he's got nice suits.
No, I just purchased some new clothing, Mary.
Right. Okay.
And I would like Steve and you.
Right.
And Steve and Joe and Marsha.
He had some leftover S&H green stamps from the 70s that he put towards these.
I was going to say, this is a special suit, you know. You could only wear this to the wedding, maybe.
I understand. This is a brand new suit.
Okay,
it was exclusively tailored for yours truly. It has my name on it, the whole thing. My guy came in from Thailand. I see him once every, got a great deal on this thing.
Is this the guy that Kaplan hooked you up with?
That's correct.
Oh,
all
right.
All of Chicago media uses them. Rafer Weigel uses them.
Let me tell you something. I can tell you one person in Chicago media that doesn't use your friend from Thailand.
Okay, fine. You don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but, you know.
I'm not wearing suits that often.
You have your own guy, Steve.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Cole.
Okay.
Yeah, bring him in. Let's have a fashion show.
So we'll do a fashion show tomorrow. Right,
fashion show tomorrow.
You got to bring in three changes of clothes.
Apparently, I got two blues and a brown to come in. How's that?
But three breaks in the 9 o'clock hour. At each break, you'll have a new look.
Okay.
Okay. Just
different ties too. Should we go the whole thing?
Well, you surprised me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of work here, Steve.
My niece is getting
married. You're the one who brought it up.
I did bring it up.
Yep.
What'd you say, Mary?
My niece is getting married this weekend, and I believe they are wearing blue suits, navy suits.
Oh, see, there you go.
Yeah.
I have four passes to the 12th annual Blackhawks convention taking a place at the end of July 26th through the 28th at the Hilton Chicago. The convention features current players, alumni, autograph and photo sessions, Q&A panels, exhibits, interactive games and more. I'll be there. Most of this radio station will be there. I say most because I don't know what people schedule, but I assume we'll all be there. Dave Ennett and I will probably do the show as we usually do, kick the whole thing off on Friday night.
I'll be there, Steve.
Rokan probably be broadcasting from there.
You would assume.
You'll be there.
Absolutely.
Visit Blackhawks.com to get you past today, but be caller number... What's Corey Crawford's number?
That'd be 50.
50. Caller number 5. Caller number 5 now, 312-981-7200. You'll be a big winner. By the way, tomorrow's the last day you can enter the Pucks in Prague Shootout, sponsored by Team Ockberg. This is the bonus trip on Steve Cochran's European vacation to Prague. Team Ockberg giving you another chance to win the 5-day trip for two to Prague this October. Package includes sightseeing, round-trip air from Chicago, a VIP ticket package to see the Chicago Blackhawks open their 2019-2020 season in the Czech Republic on October 4th. And leading up to that, I'm going to start learning Czech. You know, important phrases in Czech.
You got any?
Like, hey, that's my wallet. You know, how do you say that in Czech? For your chance to win, go to WGNRadio.com/trip and enter today. That's WGNRadio.com/trip. You have until tomorrow at 11:59 to enter. And David Ockberg will be back on Friday to announce the winner with us. You want to enter for official rules, go to WGNRadio.com. But don't forget, it ends at 11:59 tomorrow night. And we're coming back in a second with the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and Steve.
It's electric.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
What happened? Did the jukebox blow up?
I was doing the electric slide.
Yeah, you were. Getting ready for the wedding.
Oh, I hate the electric slide. How about you?
Not a big fan.
It's like the Macarena.
Yeah, not a big... Well, the Macarena, I mean, that's a killer.
No.
What's that? Chicken dance?
Oh, the chicken dance.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah. They don't do that really anymore.
Oh, really?
No, because I don't know. It's so... I love the chicken dance, though.
Are you still taking dancing lessons, Mary?
Ballroom? Uh-huh. Yes, I am. You can't really do them at weddings, though. You can't really perform a ballroom dance.
You're just gliding out there taking control.
Time for the waltz, everybody. Let's do our Viennese.
Mary's a flat-out pro, Steve.
Yeah, she really is.
No. It's unbelievable.
No,
I got a note yesterday to staff of the Steve Cochran Show. It was a thrill to talk to you guys. For someone who is housebound, it's a ray of sunshine, especially when the morons are on for entertainment. Always adds a chuckle. Moron Entertainment with Dean takes a day off today. Who's filling in for Dean?
Josh Hill is filling in for Dean, Steve.
But I'll try to pick up my own moron side for this particular listener.
Josh Hill is not a moron.
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
But he's got a chance to be.
I certainly was not expecting any reward for talking to Steve, but the Lou Malnati's pizza was delicious. Thank you so much. And that's from Gene Kennedy. Isn't that
aww.
Nice?
Aww. Thanks, Gene.
Marsha's here this week, filling in. And Marsha, I don't want you to think it's just all about Mark Carman. The audience would certainly like to know more about you.
Oh, well, absolutely.
You're a mom?
I am a mom of three.
Three? Yes. How old?
14, 7, and 3.
Wow. 14, 7, and 3.
Yeah, imagine that.
So each time he went, I don't know if we want another one.
Well, you know, there's an emotion for each child. The first child, okay, here we go.
Sure.
The second child, okay, well, they need a sibling to play with.
Sure.
And then the third child is like, oh, my God, what did I get myself into?
Yeah, so, who's going to watch the third one?
Yeah.
Well, as we've said many times, you get to three, you got to start playing zone defense. Normally, it's man to man or woman to woman.
Yeah.
Now you got your troubles. Who is the most fun of your kids?
I would say my middle child.
Oh, really?
It's a boy.
Well, boy, he's a fun boy.
He's a fun boy.
Okay. Who's the most work?
My 3-year-old.
Oh, the 3-year-old.
Of course, yes.
Well, obviously, you got to keep him alive, or him or her.
It's a boy.
A boy. You got to keep him alive. And the oldest child is a girl. And she's fine?
She's okay. She's almost out of there, so we're fine. Well, she's a teenager, so, you know, we're
you guys fight about what she wears and
well,
what her hair looks
she
like?
She steals chargers and makeup and things like that.
Oh,
so
sure.
Yeah.
She doesn't see it as stealing, I'm sure. She sees it as borrowing and forgetting to bring it back.
I guess. If you want to call it that way.
Yeah. All right, so give me a story about one of your kids.
Okay, so I guess this is appropriate because Father's Day just passed.
Yep.
And I don't know if other fathers can attest to this, but, you know, dads sometimes teach the boys bad things, such
maybe.
As going to, you know, go find a tree or behind a car somewhere when they
tinkle.
Can't make it. Yeah, go tinkle. You know, they can't make it to the restroom.
That's called a golf course.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Is that what it's called?
Well, yeah, yeah. It's just sometimes, I mean, if you can't get to a restroom. So okay. This happened where?
Well, you know, a lot of times dad just takes the boys. If they can't make it, they just go find, you know, a park somewhere, like, you know, walking a dog. But so now the boys think that whenever we're out, it's so convenient that they can just, you know.
Right. Right,
sometimes
right, right.
Pull
and
it some, down,
you and
know?
Sometimes you're in a public place.
Okay, well, let's talk about Disney World then.
What?
Yeah. Let's talk about
so
that.
So you're at Disney World?
Yeah, you know.
In Florida?
No.
In Florida.
I hope
and you're
not
walking
on a ride.
By. And there's
well, you know, I'm dealing with two kids, and I'm talking to someone about these kids.
And you're outnumbered.
And then I get
third.
A tap on my back from a lady who's working in Disney World. And she says, excuse me, ma'am, but we're not allowed to do this out here. You know, like I told my child to do this. So I turn around and I see my son at the bush.
He was in the bush on Disney. He was
Disney.
Watering the tree.
He was marking his territory. I guess he wants his.
How old was he at the time?
He was 5 years old.
And was it one of the characters that came up to you or a Disney employee?
It was an employee. And she.
Because it'd be great if it was Minnie.
And it,
oh,
it was totally
we don't pee
fault.
On the bushes.
Ma'am, we can't do that out here. And,
wait, and what are you supposed
know.
To say? You go, oh my God, I didn't know.
I didn't know. And I didn't teach him this habit, but.
Was dad there?
Yell at my
dad
husband.
Dad was not around at the time.
So you
no.
couldn't go, it's this idiot.
Yeah, it's that idiot. No, I couldn't do that.
I love that story. You know why? Because it wasn't me. But you survived.
I survived.
Did he feel badly? Like he had done something
no,
wrong? Or was it a
okay.
teaching moment?
You know what? This guy, he's so nonchalant. Okay. You know, he doesn't care.
And he's 7 now?
He is 7, yes.
Are you concerned that when he's 27, he'll be doing the same thing?
Well, he's okay. Now it's the 3-year-old we have to worry
you're
about.
Right.
Because dad has introduced him to cups.
Does your husband understand that
well,
there are public bathrooms?
Well, you know, if they're in the car and they can't stop and there's a cup or a bottle.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Find a restroom, man.
Yeah. Yeah, do me a favor.
Yeah, want me to talk to him? You want me to take him aside?
Do.
Yeah, I'll pick up the phone. if you were at Disney World and you saw a very cute little boy peeing in a bush,
trust
Marcia,
me, he
Marcia,
meant no harm.
He meant no harm, and Marcia's sorry that her husband taught him that.
Yeah.
Well done. 7:19. All right, what's coming up, Steve? Top that.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet. The MVPP is sponsored by Mega Pros. They make it fun to get stuff done.
And now it's time to move on to a little something we call
the most valuable person on the planet.
Finding a lot of great people to expose you to, when no exception today, Dr. Obana Bowden is standing by. Let me go there now. Doctor, you are the most valuable person on the planet.
Yes. I try to be.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If somebody says that to you, it's how you're supposed to react. Well, yeah, I mean, it's an awkward thing to say to somebody. But anyway, here's why. You're the founder of My Dental Gallery, with locations in Woodlawn and Chatham and in South Holland. And here's the deal. Dr. Bowden expanded his practice in 2017 to do a mobile dentistry service called Smiles of Tomorrow. You and your team do 2 days a week traveling to daycares in marginal communities across the city to give examinations, cleaning, and screenings to school-going kids who might not, maybe they don't get any dental care without you. It's a big deal.
That's absolutely right. Some don't. That's the first time they've been exposed, the first time they've been diagnosed or even taught about dentistry.
And why is oral health so important to the rest of your health?
Oral health is very important. Can't separate the mouth from the body. It all starts at your mouth. When someone shakes your hand, they're looking at your smile. They're looking at your teeth. From a kid perspective, a kid in pain can't do his work, so he can't learn.
And it's a big old opening in the front of your face, and, you know, you got to take care of it.
Yes, you do. You have to take care of it. It's consequences for not taking care of your oral health, and everything with oral health and dental decay is preventable. So you want to prevent this preventable disease from happening. Because as you grow older, if you have bad oral health growing up, it could become costly. And you really don't really have to spend money on dentistry because decay is preventable. So if you're from an underserved, lower socioeconomic class community and your parents don't really have access, it's even more important that you have a good oral health regimen, cleaning your teeth, keeping them clean, because the replacement options are so expensive that it can put a strain on the family to take away from a food budget or extracurricular budget to fix a child's teeth.
How come we don't have more black men and women in dentistry?
It's a tough pipeline. It's all, less than 5% of the dentists are black, and then it's exposure. A lot of these kids are not exposed to black dentists. Still this day, I have adults coming to my office saying they never had a black dentist. And in Chicago, it's a little bit more concentrated than most places. So you could have ran into one, but they haven't even ran into one in Chicago. So the community has to do a better job of exposing these kids, and that's what we focus on. Two of my other brothers are dentists, too, so we try to go to neighborhood schools and say, hey, we could do a career fair and expose these kids to the field of dentistry, and not only expose them in that environment, but actually get them into the office so they can see what we do on a day-to-day basis to see if it's something that they like. And if they like, then we cultivate that relationship, talk to them about, you know, the importance of keep the good grades and community service. We have about seven students right now applying for dental school, actually, that we mentor.
Yeah, and help them through the whole process from taking their boards all the way through, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Also, I'm told that you recently gave a smile makeover to an Inglewood mom who lost her teeth from being a victim of abuse, and she got her confidence back, was able to get a job. That's the other thing. You know, looking right, feeling good about yourself, help you get a job.
Yes, because she couldn't get no momentum on getting a job. She was going to job interviews, and no one would hire her. She had did some interview training. She couldn't get a job, but when she got her teeth done, it changed her confidence, changed the way people saw her. She had a job with a catering company called Fuse Catering, and the first time she went out with the catering company, she got $100 tip. And
that's great.
Those people were getting tips, but they wasn't that big, which means she had what needed inside her, It was just her mouth, and the condition of her mouth was just stopping her. Because if you work for a company don't want you to represent them with missing teeth, broken down brown teeth, because you're representing their brand.
Totally get it, and thank God you're out there doing it, because it's very important, and it's something that you've got to pay for in some way. So how do you get funded to do this?
So we don't. Normally, we with her case particularly, took some of the profit from some of the procedures I do. I do quite a few big cosmetic cases, and I always try to give back to as many people as I can without putting a strain on profit and loss, because that's very important to change their life and give them a second chance. Otherwise, not a lot of people out here doing it, so they will be stuck where they are, and that could become depressing, and that's a miserable life, and everybody deserves a quality of life.
And how'd you end up with three people as dentists? You got a dentist in the family that, you know, dad, uncle, or something?
No, I was the first doctor in my family for many generations, the first businessman. Any generation, it was or so. I saw a need for it. My mom was scared of the dentist when I was going to when I was in grade school. Kids used to have toothaches, and the teacher said, "Put your head down." That didn't make sense to me, so I said I was going to become a dentist and change the way people thought about the dentist and get into these schools and educate the kids and the teachers on what dentistry is and what to do when you actually get a toothache. So after I went through the process of actually shadowing a dentist, it was actually my family's dentist, Dr. Rowley. He was a white guy in Hyde Park. We used to go finally with my parents to the dentist, and I told him I wanted to be a dentist, and he's like, "Well, that would be cool. You want me to mention you? I was like, "Yes." So he showed me his lifestyle.
Good for him for stepping up, right?
Everyone has someone who stepped up in order to help them get to where they are. So after that, my brothers, they basically watched me, and I worked in public health for the first 5 years, helping only the underserved, and they used to come shadow me, and it's like, man, this is so rewarding, because a lot of those people was in pain, and then when they leave, they were out of pain, and they all said, "Hey, I want to be a dentist too." So they went through the program and got their doctors of dental surgery as well.
You know, we've got a lot of people listen to the show, and I always tell people it's the number one talk show until Oprah comes back. I'd be great if other dentists reached out to you and said, "How can I help too?" So they'll be able to contact you at your office, I guess, huh?
Yes, they can contact me at my office at area code 773-496-5138, or they can email me at Dr. Bowden, that's Bowden, at WD as in doll, G as in girl, smiles with an S.com.
We give you a little Lou Malnati's pizza action for you or for the office, but don't forget to floss after you're done eating.
Oh, of course not.
All right, make a note of it. Thank you, Doctor.
All right, thank you, Steve. Have a great day.
Dr. Obana Bowden, most valuable person on the planet. That's a good dude. Right? Am I right or am I right?
Yeah, I'd like you to rate yourself on your flossing talent, Steve.
You know what? I don't floss. I only occasionally, but I toothpick. I Dusty Baker toothpick. And when you go to the dentist, and I go three times a year, when you go to the dentist, they take the little pokey thing. It's the same as when I was a kid, the little pokey thing.
Oh, yeah, that thing can hurt after a while.
Yeah, and they go around and they measure how the pockets are, right?
Oh, yeah.
The
depth of the pockets.
You better not be getting fives. Fives are not good.
Yeah, they're not good.
So if you're into twos and threes, you're okay. And I'm into twos and threes.
So you've created your own dental plan, Steve.
Well, it's not, you know, you don't have to use floss. There's no. It's just about getting the food out,
yeah,
right?
Placards.
I get yelled at if I don't use floss.
The placard. Oh, the plastic thing. So the floss pre-strung.
And then a stick at the end.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Those things break all the time. You dig into the molars in the back.
I don't know if I can support this toothpick maneuver. I feel like this is an easy way out. You need to get, but you're, you know,
you
don't need my support. I get it.
My scorecard says that I'm doing just fine. Thank
you. Who are you, Dusty Baker?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. Well, you know, if I'm in a car, let's get a little personal here. But if I'm in a car and I use a toothpick, I can get rid of the toothpick. If I could dental floss in the car, what am I going to throw it on the floor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
Fresh, trying to get it off your finger.
on top of the fact that that a toothpick's a one-handed operation, dental floss is two.
Right. Right.
So what, do you drive in with your knees?
I mean, this doesn't happen often. In the rare...
Do you drive with your knees and then text with whatever else you might be operating?
Again, this doesn't happen often. I'm getting yelled at for doing these things on Instagram
Thank
videos.
Thank God Chelsea is out there to try to straighten you out.
Thank God for Chelsea, indeed.
All right, stand by. We're going to try to make you a little more successful in the next 30 minutes, 7:34. Let's come back with your headlines next on 720 WGN. Hey, is the band ready?
I hit it. Steve Cochran.
Will you please report to the radio booth?
It's Steve Cochran from the Allstate Skyline Studio
on 720 WGN.
All right, raise your hand. How many of you had a Franklin Covey planner? I'm talking about the legitimate paper product, the book you'd open, you'd write this stuff down. I'm the only one?
Yeah, no.
How could they have been the gigantic success they were if I was the only one buying them? Okay, if you say so. Scott Jeffrey Miller, Executive Vice President of Franklin Covey. By the way, a company that's done a very nice job of transitioning to the digital world. Scott Jeffrey Miller joins us now. Scott Jeffrey Miller, I don't know, what do I call you other than Mr. Miller?
Scott. Good morning, by the way.
Hey, Scott, listen, I'm a customer. I unlike these other people on the show who are frauds who claim they haven't bought your product, I know they have.
Well, I appreciate that. In fact, at our peak, we sold 40 million planners a year. We've actually transitioned out of that business now and are almost an exclusively consulting company focused on leadership development. But thank you for your business. You made us who we are.
And you have a book called Management Mess to Leadership Success, 30 Challenges to Become the Leader That You Would Follow. That's really the goal, right? You got to be a good enough leader that people would follow. So ask yourself the question, what's going to make you somebody that would follow you?
That's right. I think there is this truth, Steve, that all of us have some messes. No one is a complete success. No one's a complete mess. But I think that vulnerability is going to be a key leadership competency in the coming years. So as leaders can look at their blind spots, recognize you've got some messes. So let's just call them out. Call them out yourself. Everybody else sees them. You might as well own them yourself and move towards success.
Listening, big part of that, right?
Huge. There's 30 challenges in the book. The third one is listen first. And Steve, it's kind of counterintuitive because most leaders have spent their career learning how to be a better communicator, talk better, build your vocabulary, be more influential. But listening is also a leadership skill. And it takes a really selfless, really empathetic listener to really understand what the other person's fears are, their concerns. It's counterintuitive, but it's wildly important.
Making time for relationships is challenge number 10. Is that face-to-face or digital or both?
I think it's everything. I think it's important that all leaders know your people are your most precious asset, and your job is to build culture, create conditions where everybody chooses a high level of engagement. So appropriately, get to know your people. You know, after your reputation, your relationships are your most important legacy in life. So slow down. To quote our founder, Stephen Covey, with people, slow is fast, and fast is slow. Relationships are everything in the workplace.
Show loyalty. This is a big one to me. Loyalty really matters, in not fake loyalty like we see in politics today, but actual legitimate loyalty where you give it and you get it in return.
Steve, it's so true. And I think the best way to build loyalty is to make sure that you're loyal to others. And I kind of talk about in the book how gossip is a cancer in organizations. And the tip that I give, that Dr. Covey again popularized, is whenever you are talking about someone who is not in your presence, speak about them as if they were, as if they were standing right next to you. Always be loyal to the absent. Because when you're loyal to those who are absent, you build the trust and confidence of those who are present. So if I talk about you just like I would when you're not around, everybody else will know that I'm not going to gossip about them as well. I think it is arguably the biggest tangible skill that leaders can use to change the culture of their organization. Just stop talking about people when they're not around you as if they were around you.
Yeah, because you also make it okay in the book to tell the truth to others, including you, the boss. And you talk about creating vision and identifying the wildly important goals that you have, because that's not always obvious.
making high-value decisions, leading through change, and getting better. It's all in the book, Management Mess to Leadership Success, 30 Challenges to Become the Leader You Would Follow. Now, Mark Carman is here, filling in for Dave Ennett this week. Now, Mark, you're somebody who always seems to be working on self-improvement.
Thank you, Steve.
I do. I respect that. You're out in the woods with your shirt off, beating your chest with other people, and communing.
Sure.
But you're trying to get better. So organizationally, you've told me in the past that you're a mess.
Yes, that's true. It's a skill gap.
So here's your shot. Scott Jeffrey Miller is here. He's the boss at Franklin Covey. What do you want to know from Scott?
Well, if we're going organizationally, I think that's kind of a nuts and bolts thing. But I am curious, like, what you would say to somebody who thinks they have it all in their head, Scott, and can plan their day, their month, and then ends up getting a situation where perhaps you're letting people down because you've double booked yourself, you forget things, and then maybe if you have somebody like that in your organization, how would you handle it?
I think two bits of advice: multitasking is a myth. It's not true. People can do more than one thing at the same time, but not with excellence. So I would argue, make less commitments. Under-promise and over-deliver. You know, I have a similar challenge. I tend to want to be all things to all people, and if I commit to 10 things, I'm going to deliver 7 in spades, but 3 people, I'm going to leave in a lurch. So I am deliberately trying to commit and say yes more, less, say yes less, and say no more. I think our legacies, our organization, relates to taking on too much. So be very deliberate. What do you want your brand to be? Don't you want to be known as the guy who's 3 for 3 and not 3 for 5?
You know, also, I'm a procrastinator, professional Olympic level, and I've gotten better at it, but I'm not great at it. You know, I'm putting off a decision that I need to make right now. But having said that, but you take procrastination, combine it with ADD, you got some problems, and I have both of those. But if I just do one thing, if I stop thinking about the order of things that I have to do, if I stop making specific lists and then feel badly about myself at the end of the day, if I just do one thing, and then I just do the next thing, and then I just do the next thing, I get stuff accomplished. Does that sound crazy?
Not at all. In fact, I think most of the seasoned leaders will tell you, when you're faced, Steve, with an especially challenging task, you know, having a high courage conversation or a negotiation or something that's really emotionally charged, do it first. Get it out of the way. It sounds easy. It's harder to do. But everybody that I interview that's a senior executive will tell you, they get in the morning and they kick off the most challenging things first, because the psychological energy it releases and your anxiety lessens, now you have energy for the rest of the tasks as well. Figure out what is the thing that's most preoccupying you. Exercise the courage, get it done, and move on.
Mary Vandeville.
So, Scott, you're saying it's kind of not as good to multitask, to be more... I always thought it was good to be good at a lot of things versus great at one thing, because that makes you a more interesting person, because, you know, you have a lot more hobbies. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's a difference in being a generalist as opposed to a specialist. I'm a generalist, right? I host a radio program. I'm an author. I speak. I lead marketing. But that doesn't mean I'm doing all those things at the same time. Let's not confuse the value of being well-rounded, well-educated, and being able to do a lot of different things with not doing them at the same time. All the scientific research shows that we are wired, our brains are wired to do one thing at a time, defend ourselves from a tiger, right? Eat food, hunt, whatever it is. So let's separate the very valuable asset of being broad in our knowledge and in our capabilities, but exercising them very specifically on one thing and then the next. You can kind of only land one plane at a time with excellence. And I think excellence is the differentiator. Too many of us are doing too many things at B level, when if we said no to more, we could do fewer things at A level.
Steve Grzanich, you talk to business leaders all the time on the opening bell. My guest is Scott Jeffrey Miller. The book is Management Mess to Leadership Success. Is there one thing that you hear from CEOs again and again and again that seems to be a leadership quality?
The leaders, the CEOs we interview, they all have a routine. They all have, especially a morning routine. I wonder how important that is to your, you know, just to begin your day, regardless of when you begin it, to have a routine, either make your bed or exercise or do something like that in the morning.
I think, again, most of science shows that highly influential leaders do that. They have a morning routine. But I think more importantly is understanding what is your natural cycle, if you will, your energy, your stamina. Daniel Pink, the social scientist, wrote a famed book called When. One of the essence of the book is understanding what is your natural cycle in terms of your peaks, your valleys, and how you kind of bounce back, your troughs. My peak is 4 a.m. to 9 a.m., my highest energy. And if you want my best thinking, my best interview, my best creativity, get me before 9 or 9:30 in the morning. And then I kind of go into a trough at lunchtime. I bounce back after lunch. But everybody knows if you want to be and get Scott's finest attention, get it first thing in the morning. And I've actually started to organize my activities, my meetings, my one-on-ones, my interviews first thing in the morning. So for people, I think, I don't know if it doesn't matter if you're productive in the morning or in the evening, know kind of your own energy level, where what time of day is your best, and then deliberately organize your day around your natural energy flow.
Yeah, I mean, after 10 o'clock, I'm pretty much useless.
Yeah, but it's important to note, I mean, I've talked to people who, especially our creatives, who have that energy pop in the afternoon. So it's important to say that it's not necessarily in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Marcia, morning
and
afternoon.
Or even
person.
In the evening.
You know,
right? I know a lot of authors that write their books late at night.
Yeah.
Right, whatever it takes.
I agree.
You're a night person?
I was going to say nighttime works for me.
Yeah. Well, because you're out at the clubs.
No.
Oh,
no.
Sorry. That's a different person.
And a lot of musicians are at night, too.
What a mess.
The book is called Management Mess to Leadership Success. Scott Jeffrey Miller, thank you.
That's great. I'll be at the book stall in Winnetka tonight signing books at 6:30. So come on up and say hi and get a book signed.
And keep in mind, he's a morning person, so don't stay too long and talk to him. I appreciate you being on. If you're thinking about moving to the city, I have a really nice place you could pick up. It's going to cost you $45,000 a month. But it's a brand new apartment, and you know, if you're sitting on some cash and you could drop, what would that be, $500,000 a year in rent? I mean, this could be your place.
Got a steam shower in there?
Better.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Sponsored by our friends at Ravinia. Mark Harmon's here. Oh, by the way, I got a pair of lawn tickets to Ravinia on July 12th to see the Oscar-winning film West Side Story, with a score performed live by the CSO, and Dean Richards will be there for a pre-concert yap.
You like the pavilion out there, Steve? You like the grass? You go?
I like the pavilion.
Do you?
Yeah.
You don't like to get a nice blanket and a wine and a cheese?
Are you proposing a picnic, you and I?
Why not?
A checkered red blanket.
Get a Diet Coke.
Wicker going. Basket.
We could pick up some
chicken.
Gouda.
Okay. It's going to be a man picnic. Get chicken. Get tickets at Ravinia.org. I got two pair of lawn tickets. Let's give one of those away right now. Seventh caller, 312-981-7200. All right, so you brought us Josh Hill. Tell me about Josh.
Josh Hill is one of the most well-versed people in all of media, Steve. He's the editorial expert extraordinaire at fansided.com. He knows his sports, but he also knows his entertainment. He was on our show talking about Game of Thrones, winterisscoming.net.
He's the editorial director?
Yes, and he's...
he's a big shot. He's like your boss over there at FanSided.
Let's not go that crazy. I mean, but he's a Minnesota-turned-Chicago, and he's living right down the street from here.
Oh, is that right?
He's right down on Michigan Avenue.
You think you got to come over. Yeah. Get out of bed, put some pants on.
I offered the studio. He was a little intimidated.
Josh Hill joins us now. Good morning, Josh.
Oh, good morning. Intimidated, not so much as in I had to go to work. So somebody has to work if Carm's not going to.
You probably should have gone with intimidated.
We're doing this.
You probably should have just gone with intimidated. It's more flattery.
Yeah, that's true. But,
you know, I'm a lot like Trump. I just respond to flattery. all right, so in show business today, we got this new show, Euphoria. By the way, Dean's in London, which is why we asked Josh to do this. The show Euphoria, which is a lot of teenage sex, drugs, and troubles. Is anybody over the age of 21 going to be able to watch this?
I think so. It's kind of a throwback to me to some of the things that we had in the 90s, where things were shocking, but they were shocking to a point. We went through a period of time, it feels like, in the aughts, where things were just shocking for the sake of being shocking. But this is educational in that there's a disconnect between what it was like to be a teenager, even when I was a teenager, like 10, 11 years ago, and what it's like to be a teenager now in this age of technology where there's so much more pressure, there's so many more eyes on you at all times. And there's a different way of being raised, and I think that a show like this is, yes, it's shocking because it's about sex, it's about drugs, it's about all of these things with young people, but it's also educational to people who have been taken out of that lifestyle for a while, who haven't been in high school, who haven't been around young people for a while, or what it's like to be a young person. And this is shining a light on an entirely different way of living, something that we haven't been paying attention to. So in that, yeah, it's shocking, but I also think it can be educational and maybe bridge a gap for a conversation to be had between the cross generations, which is something that I think is lacking in this day and age.
All right, let's go backstage show business here. Now, this is teenagers on the show. A lot of nudity. I assume those who are nude and having sex are not teenagers.
No, that's not the case. And if that is the case, then there's some sort of form or some sort of consent that has been signed across. But there's
it's some sort of lack of parenting.
Yeah, so, well, there's that also could be a commentary. People, parents letting their kids do this show, not knowing what they're getting into.
That's a good point. It's a very good point.
Is this the one with Zendaya? Right?
It is, yeah. Okay. So we got the Disney Channel star who's come over and is doing this dark and gritty HBO show.
Yeah, that's kind of, whoa.
Oh, Zendaya!
Yeah, she was on Dancing with the Stars, too, by the way.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
The Bachelorette. Look, I don't watch this show, but I occasionally walk into a room where it's on, and for 5 minutes I stare at the car accident that it is. This couldn't be more fraudulent, more fake, more ridiculous. Aren't they close to jumping the shark here?
That's kind of where a lot of people are. That's where I'm at. I watch this show. It's a guilty pleasure or just a straight-up pleasure. But that's kind of the commentary that's been around this season is it's supposed to be a dramatic season. Chris Harrison always says this is the dramatic season of The Bachelorette. And he corrected himself last night and said it's just drama-filled. It's not dramatic. So a lot of people think it's kind of jumped the shark. Last year we had our infamous jumping the fence moments where one of the contestants literally left by jumping a fence. Last night we had a moment where a guy's wandering around in the Scottish countryside and decides to come back to the house for Hannah. So it's getting to a point where we've seen these things before. I don't know how much you can change the Bachelorette format. I don't know how much it needs to be changed because people still watch it. But there is this sense that maybe it's jumped the shark, which is a commentary in of itself. Can the Bachelorette actually jump the shark?
Yeah, that's a great point. And in suspending your disbelief, there is a limit to that as well. Because let's be honest, if you've got a booted bachelor who's wandering around with a wedding ring that he bought, do I have the story right? And then he was going to come back and forcibly propose. We have crew around. We have security. We have people that protect her. She doesn't have to be afraid. That's the whole thing that just did seem patently ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. And then you have the idea that you have this entire house of guys who are vying for the heart of this woman who has to choose between these 20 men. It's really, the concept doesn't seem very 2019. Especially with how far we've come with social norms and everything. It doesn't seem like a 2019 concept anymore, but that doesn't mean it's not infinitely fascinating to watch a bunch of grown men whine in a room in suits about how they're not getting enough time with this
right.
girl. It's fascinating. It's extremely entertaining. So I don't think it's going anywhere. But
yeah, and the idea that two grown men of any age would sit around together and go, wow, if it's not me, I hope it's you. Come on. Stop it.
Especially when they start crying. And I mean, last year, you know, you had Colton last season. He was the virgin.
That's the guy that jumped over the fence, right?
He was the one that jumped over the fence. Yeah, so I
seem to know a lot more about this show than I should.
Yeah, what the heck? But I'm with Joe. I jump ship or jump shark.
Jump shark.
Yes,
you jump the shark.
I'm done with it this season.
All right, Josh Hill from Fansided. Last word, OJ and Bill Cosby, both on social media this week. Is it time to pull the plug on Twitter?
I think that's the death knell on Twitter. Once they get on Twitter and they're spouting up, like what good can come of OJ Simpson being on Twitter? Like he's been on for about 3 days. And he's already the subject of controversy. Like, I don't understand. Like, again, it's kind of like The Bachelorette. It's fascinating from our standpoint in that we're disassociated from everything and we want to watch the car wreck. But nothing good can come from Bill Cosby and O.J. Simpson being on Twitter other than just morbid fascination from everybody else around the world. I don't get it. I think maybe it's time to shut down Twitter. This is the end of Twitter.
The idea that Cosby could have somebody tweet for him and that he would somehow think that's okay means one of two things. Either he's sitting in prison and he's just going to be miserably public now for the rest of his miserable life, or he is completely bananas and we ought to put a second lock on the door. Or maybe it's both.
Yesterday, OJ allegedly is threatening somebody with knife emojis in the DMs. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
Wow.
Like, who thinks that this is a good idea? Like, who signed off on this? I need to know what the chain of command is because I have a number of follow-up questions.
I tell you what, if I was Trump, I would just tweet out today, you think I'm crazy. OJ and Cosby are on Twitter. Mark Carmen, you get the last word.
Josh Hill, if you were to advise someone whether to watch, I believe Handmaid's Tale, the next season is coming out right around now, and then you got Big Little Lies, which is starting to roll again. Which of those two are you recommending for the novices out there?
Jump on Big Little Lies. The first season was a phenomenon. The second season is a phenomenon as well, and it also has Meryl Streep. I don't know. That's all that I need. I don't know what you need, Carm.
Josh Hill. All I need. Josh Hill, you're exactly right. What is Meryl Streep doing on TV?
She's doing it.
Just for fun?
I watched like 5 minutes of it last night.
This tells you that movie stars are totally cool with this, and True Detective sort of broke the ice on this, but movie stars are clamoring now to do high-end cable.
Yeah, Meryl Streep on Big Little Lies is one of the greatest heat checks I've ever seen in my life. She's going to win an Emmy for that thing. Yeah. It's great.
Hey, you're great, man. Thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There you go. Josh Hill. He's really good.
Steve, I know talent.
Yeah, way to bring it. And the only plug we need to say is fan-sided?
Sure. I guess we can give him a little love on his Twitter at, what is it? I just tweeted it myself. It is at, if you want to follow Hill, at J-D-A-V Hill.
J-D-A-V Hill.
Josh David Hill. J-D-A-V Hill.
I'm follow him right now.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Foghat? Joe, how do you know Foghat? It's like the middle 70s. I don't know. Is this a band you listen to? No.
Days of
Confused. Is this on the list I gave you? No, it's foggy. I'm playing Foghat.
Oh,
I get it,
yeah.
But I just wondered how you knew Foghat. You just Google fog songs and it pops up?
Well, I mean, I've heard of Foghat, but I'm not like a fan of, I'm not like rocking the Foghat.
I have this album.
I'll bet you do.
I do. Don't you?
I don't know that I even know where my albums are. Think about all the albums you're able to collect as a disc jockey. I'm sure I have them stored somewhere safe where they won't decompose, like in the garage.
You still have VHS tapes?
Oh, yeah. Tons.
Really?
Yeah. I have cassettes. Boxes and boxes and boxes.
I just sent mine
cassettes.
Into that legacy thing you gave me for Christmas.
Good.
Some of my old cassettes and listen to what I sounded like. Ugh, I don't even want to hear it.
I've been thinking about that for a while, that we should do a early tapes thing on the show where we all bring in our tapes from early in the career.
Oh, boy.
I could bring in something from WENY in Elmira, say circa 1982.
Ooh.
Do we actually have a cassette player?
Yeah, how are we
going to
play them?
Digitized any of that stuff yet?
I asked for a cassette player, one of the engineers, a while ago to play these at home before I sent them in to Legacy,
yeah.
And there isn't one. They're we don't have one.
Oh, please, of course they do.
Come on. No, ask Murdoch.
They've got it. Well, if they don't have one, they have access to one.
Oh. Yeah, we had one at the old place. That's how I got a lot of that stuff from, like, Swirsky during the Walk of Fame.
I think they threw them away. I don't know.
No, can't happen.
Okay, maybe they just didn't want me to have it.
If not, go on eBay and buy one. They're about $30.
Romano pulled the Swirsk off cassette. That's an amazing statement on the show today.
Yeah, it was Super Bowl tape. It was some good stuff, for sure.
I just Googled cassette player on, just Amazon search cassette player. $21.99, $29.99 for a boombox. So here's a nice one for you, Mary. It's bright pink.
Ooh.
$12.99.
Oh, thanks.
Got
you
a cassette
for me?
Cassette boombox. It would play MP3s and CDs too. It was old school. $69.91. And by the way, by old school we mean the 90s.
Yes.
So, yikes. So my daughter-in-law has been trying to get me to get a place in the city, for us to get a place in the city. And I may have found it. Now, I'm only about $44,500 a month short on the rent. But there's a new apartment, a triple tower complex called Town Park. It's on Well Street. And a $45,000 a month rental is now the most expensive rental in the city. This would be the equivalent of the mortgage on an $8.2 million house. And I know what you're thinking. If you can afford an $8.2 million house, why would you rent? Right? Chicago's newest, most expensive apartment has its own outdoor pool and hot tub. That's on the 32nd floor terrace. Has more terrace space off the 31st floor, plus views of the lake skyline and the city from indoors and out. It also has an interior elevator.
This is going on all over the city, Steve. They're buying up the big buildings. They're turning them into all rentals. And now this.
The trio towers at Old Town Park are not open yet, but they got a preview of the apartment for Chicago Business, which is where the story comes from. Emily Santos. Has Emily Santos been on the show? Why does that name sound so familiar? I think she's been on the show before. Anyway, Emily Santos is the agent for At Properties, and she said, we expect to rent it to a CEO or a professional athlete. A renter can sign a one-year lease or go month to month. Well, if it's $45,000 a month, month to month, it's got to be what, $72,500? They got to make a little bonus off that, right? Month to month is always more expensive.
My only question is, does this come with water? Is water and heat included, or is that extra?
Security deposit. Just to get the key to the front door, first, last, and security deposit would be what, about $135,000? This $8 million house, again, you can rent it for $45,000. The pictures are fantastic. So
I bet it has one of those gold toilets, doesn't it?
Well, of course it does. Yeah. Four bedroom, 4,185 square foot apartment. It's got 3,540 square feet of outdoor space. Well, that sounds like the debt. Well, I don't quite understand that, because unless that's not included in the 4,100 indoor space. In other words, the deck is way bigger than the apartment.
That's for your outdoor kitchen. You know how everybody has to have the outdoor kitchen now?
Yeah, well, it went into the main living space on the 31st floor. You got a bar and media room.
Nice.
On a slightly raised mezzanine that gives the intimacy of a library in a suburban mansion. Concealed behind the kitchen, with a vast quartz-topped island, is a second kitchen for prep work for your caterers.
Gotta have that.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Anyway, I'll post this story to Twitter, at Cochran Show, and you can pick it up before me. It's 8:33. Eddie Olchek's coming up. We'll get to the headlines first. That's next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
My friend Edward Olchek. Good morning.
Hi, Steve.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Doing fine. Nice job in the final, and I would expect nothing less, but you and Doc were terrific.
Well, that's very nice of you. Sitting next to Doc. I think that was our 13th final. Stanley Cup final that we've done together, our third game seven in a Stanley Cup final, which is obviously pretty darn special.
Game sevens are the best.
Yeah. There's a different vibe. There's a different feel when you get that far. You play like you train all summer. You get through five or six exhibition games. You play an 82-game schedule, and then whatever happens in the playoffs, you get to about 113 games. And here you are playing for the greatest trophy in all professional sports, and certainly Blackhawk fans and the Blackhawk organization, Rocky Wirtz, John McDonough, Jay Blunk, certainly know all about that, winning three cups in the last, 9 or 10 years, whatever the number is. And it's a great privilege to sit next to Doc, and a great privilege to call those games.
And St. Louis got one. I'm actually happy they got one. Now one's enough. Mm-hmm. Now we go back and get ours.
Yeah, when your arch rival gets the cup, probably gets the attention of everybody over there at 1901 West Madison. So, you know what? Look at it, Steve, from the aspect of
Like, we've seen some incredible individual comebacks from athletes in all sports, and most recently, obviously, Tiger Woods coming back and winning the Masters. But when you look at team sports and what they accomplished, they were dead last in the league in the first couple of days of January. I mean, like, and here they are winning the Stanley Cup. And I thought that they were a team that would be battling for a playoff position. You know, they'd be right in the middle of the pack of the tough Central Division. And, you know, how they got there, I guess you can debate it. But, you know, to be dead last, and, you know, 45 games into the regular season, dead last in the league, not in a division, not
worst team in hockey,
not in your state, whatever. I mean, they're just an incredible run. So, you know, turn the page. You got the draft coming up this Friday and Saturday, and the Blackhawks have the third overall pick, and some great luck for them in the draft lottery to be able to move up as much as they did, and it'll be really interesting to see what direction they go. So a lot of positive things going on with the Blackhawks here the last couple of weeks, and hopefully have a good draft and get ready for training camp and start the season on a real strong note.
We'll get back to the draft in a second. What do you think of the Ollie Matta trade?
Well, I mean, he's an experienced guy, even though he's only, 24, 25 years of age. He's won, which is certainly an important part. I mean, he's battled some injuries over his career, which obviously is a concern for a guy that's at a young age. Didn't play a lot in the playoffs, but, you know, he's going to get a fresh start here. And, you know, he's got some guys that he can certainly lean on, and lean on a guy like Duncan Keith or Brent Seabrook, guys that have been around the block. And, you know, sometimes change is good. So, you know, the Hawks are looking to get some experience on the back end with that trade from Pittsburgh.
And Dominic Cahoon goes. It's not easy to let him go, but, I mean, you got to give something to get something.
Yeah, I mean, a surplus of forwards. And, you know, look, I mean, Cahoon's a guy that, you know, I think that is, I don't want to say a common player that you can find, in my opinion, Steve, but, you know, to be able to move him and a draft pick and get a guy that has experience like Ole Matta and had won, like I said, I think a very good move by Stan Bowman. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how he fits in, where Jeremy slots him in come training.
Edzo, Mark Carmen, I miss you.
Hey, Mark. What's up, Carmen? How you doing, bud?
Don't say something to make him uncomfortable.
He won't get uncomfortable. We have that relationship.
I mean, I'm sure he misses you too, but don't make him say it.
Hey, let me ask you this: Patrick Kane, best American player of all time. What would you say?
Right now?
No, ever. Let's go. Let's. By the time he's done, do you think he'll be considered?
Oh, no, wait a second. He just changed the question.
Yeah, he did.
Which is it?
Is it right now or is it all time once he's done?
I think right now is too easy. I want to go all time once he's done.
Whoa! What do you mean right now? Right now is too easy.
Right now he's the best one. Right now he's the best American-born player ever.
No, I'm saying. Well, hold on. I'm saying right now in the league he's the best American.
Oh, in the league.
Yes. Listen to the witness crumble.
You didn't say the league. You did not say the league.
I did not. You're correct.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Okay,
but
so is he the best American-born player in the NHL right now? That's the question.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, 100%.
I agree.
Is he the greatest American-born player ever to play in the National Hockey League? No, not yet. Not yet.
He could be.
Chris Chelios is the greatest American-born hockey player ever to play in the National Hockey League, without question.
And by the way, not just because Chris Chelios played 57 years. He played quality for 99% of his career.
Yeah, he played in every era. He played any way that you wanted. Norris Trophy winner for the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. He won a championship. He played on 25 Olympic teams, which is just absolutely incredible. And proud to call him one of Chicago's very own. And I played with Chelly on the 84 Olympic team over in Sarajevo, and used to watch him as a young kid growing up on the south side. And not that he's that much older than I am, but you know, you got to respect your elders. But right now, Con, there's no doubt in my mind that that Chelly is the man. And look, is Kaner in the top five? Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, Chelly's still got game. I saw him at Chipotle last night. He checked me into the counter. So he hasn't lost a step.
I want to know what Kaner's got to do to pass him.
What does he have to do?
Mm-hmm. How many more goals?
Well,
how many more cups?
Gonna play a couple of more years.
Uh-huh.
He's going to probably, in my opinion, I think he's got a great chance at getting to I think he's got a very good chance of getting to 500 goals, which would be an absolute incredible accomplishment. Look, he's working his way through, but like I said, when you play, as Steve said, when you play 52 years in the National Hockey League, there is something for that. And like I said, Kaner is in the team picture right now. You want to go to the Mount Rushmore of American-born hockey players. I'm not going to argue that at all, but he's certainly working his way to it. And do I see him surpassing Chelly at some point? I would probably be showing my stripes and my, my thought process of being an older guy and knowing how tough it was to play in the National Hockey League at that era. But can I see one in 1A? 100%.
You know, I obviously not an American-born player, but the other day, because you know how much I love hockey, I was looking at Gretzky's career statistics.
Those aren't bad.
I mean, it is so off the chart. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, almost every record, Steve, there is, right? Like, when you really, it is gaudy. Like, when you compare, when you compare individual stats, and this is what has driven me crazy my whole life, because I've always tried to be a spokesperson for what we, you know, what I think is the greatest game in the world. When you compare in a team sport, his individual stats and the record, like, you sit there and go,
it's unbelievable.
Like, if this guy is like, how can you not say he's not, you know, the greatest athlete or greatest player on a team sport ever? Like, when you look at it, it's just not even, he's got more, what does he have? He has more assists in his career than players have points.
Exactly.
The next closest guy, which.
That's exactly right.
All right, that's
the
not,
single
that's,
most
that's,
dominant,
incredible.
The single most dominant superstar in any team sport. I couldn't agree with you.
Yeah, it is really crazy, but guys that played against him like myself wasn't it was obviously it was an honor, but it wasn't fun on a lot of nights when you're sitting there watching him get 3 and 4 apples a night and decide to go ahead and get a couple of goals as well. But yeah, it was pretty special guy. That's for sure.
And I used to watch these old guys play, like Eddie and Gretzky. And I'm telling when I was a boy, and I'm telling you. Gretzky, you know, not physically imposing, but he was always in the right place.
He knew what was going to happen. We saw the greatest basketball player in the world play here for how many years? And oh, by the way, he was drafted in 1984 with another guy from Chicago that got drafted by his hometown team in 1984. He built the United Center, and I just kind of maybe put a cone up at the parking lot there over the years. So, MJ would see things happen before they did, right? And that's how Gretzky saw the game. It was almost like he was, you know, sitting up at the press box and, okay, this is the open area, so I'm going to go here, and this is exactly what's going to happen. Those players are just, that's why they're who they are, is because they just know what's going to happen before it does, and that's what separates them from everybody else.
92 goals in one season.
Yeah.
163 assists in one season.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like he played a 200-game season and nobody noticed. All right, I got to ask about the draft before we run out of time. Yeah. We only got like a minute here. But Alex Turcotte, I think he's from the Northwest side. He was a center on the U.S. National Team Developmental Program. He wants to play for the Hawks, which, why wouldn't he? He's an all-around center. You know, he's a great prospect. Is he the obvious choice, or is it not so obvious?
That's a good question. Considering where I am on the totem pole, I'm not probably the guy to answer that. But I certainly know what Alex is thinking about and dreaming about, because I was in that same exact position.
Sure.
Hard to believe 35 years ago, where you're a couple of days from the draft and you grew up living and dying with your favorite team, as I did with the Blackhawks, and you're not knowing what's going to happen, or, you know, you have conversations with teams and, you know, you kind of get an idea from your agent. But the scary thing for me is, on a personal level, I played against his dad, Elfie, who played in the National Hockey League for a bunch of years over in Detroit. And it just goes like, man, oh, man, I know I'm getting old, but when you start seeing offsprings of guys that you played against as a young kid, you sit there and go, you give your head a shake and go, man, oh, man, where in the hell is the time gone? So, look, I hope for Alex and his family, all his dreams come true. And if it would be if it would happen that he gets drafted by his hometown team, I certainly know what he would be feeling, because I was lucky enough to live that dream myself when I got drafted by the Blackhawks third overall back in 1984.
Be awfully cool. It really would. And if it makes you feel any better, I'll leave you with this. There's probably not a week that goes by where I don't run into somebody walking down the street with kids who stops and says hi and goes, I used to listen to you when I was a kid. Say hi to my kids. I've got a few years on Eddie.
Hey, last time I checked there, Mr. Cochran, Father Time is undefeated last time I checked.
Seems like that's right. Eddie Olczyk, thank you, my friend.
Okay, see you, Steve. See you, Tom.
See you, Ezel.
He's the best. And a handsome devil at 51 or 2, isn't he?
He's adorable.
Yeah.
He could be on a billboard.
I don't know, adorable is a word I would have used, but anyway. Coming up after 9 o'clock, the Illinois Bar Association Orchestra. And trip cartoonist Scott Santis, who has got some stories to tell. And in the meantime, check out the latest edition of the Steve Cochran Everything podcast. I talked to Mr. Skin this week. Now, this is not for everybody, but Mr. Skin is a pioneer and a pretty entertaining Chicago story. He's got a book out about his life and a good dude. Mr. Skin, WGNRadio.com/Cochran. I asked him when I talked to him, I said, what was it like when you went to your parents and said, I think I've really locked into a career. I'm going to be Mr. Skin.
Or when he met his wife's parents, if he's even married.
I didn't think about his wife. Yes. Oh, he's got a family. Been married forever. And his wife, I asked him about his wife, too, but she met him before he became what he is, which is an incredibly successful guy. And she's been on board the whole way. And his mother now actually works for the company. And so I think she's about 80 years old. You know? I'm telling you. You know what I'm saying. WGNRadio.com/Cochran for all of the podcast guests that we are piling up on the Everything Podcast. All right, we'll come back in just a second. Steve will be in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
Pucks in Prague. Last chance for you to enter tomorrow at 11:59 p.m. And David Ockberg, Team Ockberg, giving you another chance to win a 5-day trip for two. It's my European vacation, and you can come too. Round trip air from Chicago, VIP ticket package. See the Blackhawks and the Flyers for the 2019-2020 season opener in the Czech Republic. And Ockberg will be in Friday to pick a winner. But you got to do it online. To enter and get the official rules, go to WGNRadio.com/trip. Contest ends tomorrow at 11:59. Joining us in the studio now, Scott Stantis, world-famous editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Hey, what happened to you and I? You came on this show probably 10 years ago when I was doing the afternoon show. Did you annoy me or something? How come you haven't been on since
then? No, I think I annoyed you.
That's what I'm saying. Did you annoy me? Why didn't you come on? Haven't you come? You haven't been on since then.
Wore pants and everything. I mean, it was...
That's one of us. Yeah, that's one of us. I saw a story the other day, and I was thinking of you because... a major newspaper in the United States said, well, we're not going to do editorial cartoons anymore.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very bad trend and a tough time for newspapers.
Well, yeah, but it's stupid. I mean,
it is stupid.
Well, here's the stupid part. Can I just point out the stupid here? They ran a cartoon, and it was President Trump wearing a yarmulke walking Netanyahu as a dog with a collar that has the Star of David on it. Ostensibly, because that's what's on, you know, Israel's flag, right?
Right.
So the cartoon ran. People got angry. They probably should have. It was ill-advised. But here's the funny part. The guy who picked it, there are editors who do their... This is their job. They pick the cartoon.
Well, there's layers of approval for this stuff.
Let's go with layers.
Yeah.
There used to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now they make this pronouncement that they're not... They fired their cartoonist who worked in their... Paris edition, and they fire the guy who does their cartoons in their Asian edition. Neither of these guys drew this cartoon. So
why take out everybody?
Then they make this announcement that we're not going to run editorial cartoons at all, ever. And so none of these people drew these cartoons. And by the way, this is the punchline. The guy who picked the cartoon, the editor, still has his stinking job.
It makes no sense. Makes no sense at all. I mean, the one person that's supposed to go, okay, well, this is probably not a great idea for us, and we're not going to do it. Then nobody gets fired.
Right. Or just don't, you know, make that kind of pronouncement. That
well, how many times have you run into that where you've drawn something and you feel really good about it? And, you know, I mean, you do what I do in a different way where there's always going to be people that go, well, why'd you have to do that? Why'd you have to say that? Why'd you have to draw that? Is this a good idea? And sometimes you have to fight for what it is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And sometimes you have to fight and say, this is, you know, this is exactly the right way to say it, because this is wrong, because this is, you know, I feel strongly about this. That's what's great about editorial cartoons. And what's weird is the diminishment of editorial cartoons in America, you know, coupled with the diminishment of newspapers. But newspapers getting rid of cartoonists is crazy. In this day and age, when people read less and when images are more immediate.
Well, you know, I've always said this. The great thing about political cartoons is they please the stupid. And they intrigue the smart because there's no reading involved. And if you're smart and intrigued by it, you read it and you see the three or four layers, speaking of layers, of the meaning of the cartoon.
Yeah. So getting rid of that, absolutely brilliant. I was looking through a thing called Press Display. I look at print editions because I ego surf every morning to see where my
cartoons are. Yeah, where am I? So who's talking about me today?
And there's a newspaper, and there are two newspapers had no art on the page because you know what? If you see a page that's just gray, you just want to read it, don't you?
Absolutely.
Am I right?
It just jumps out.
Oh, you say, oh, please. And the headline was about some radio tower they are putting up someplace in Florida.
I'm not even interested in that, and I'm still in this business. It is unfortunate, and believe it or not, and I think a lot of you do, because of the smartest audience in radio, is editorial cartoons and political cartoons are part of the key to covering those who rule us. And without the Fifth Estate, including the cartoonists, we got nothing.
I agree. Couldn't agree more.
Well, nice to see you.
Nice to be seen.
Welcome back. Don't screw this one up.
Yes, sir. I'll be polite.
So let's talk about the Hamilton exhibit. How'd you get involved in this?
They called me up. I mean, it's that simple.
You're minding your own business?
Yeah, just, you know, living life, and got a call. And they said, would you like to be involved in a Hamilton project? And, of course, we were asked that. You go,
yeah.
And so we worked this out. We worked with a production company out of Washington, D.C. And I got to tell you, Steve, the funniest thing is, like, we're talking, we have these conference calls and these video chats, and they're going, yeah, you know, Lin-Manuel likes this and he likes that. I'm sitting there going, oh, yes, well, of course, that makes perfect sense. But inside of me is this 5-year-old child going, squee! This is the best.
Lin-Manuel likes me.
He likes me. He really likes me. And so I did work on the Federalist. And I love history. I'm a history wonk.
Yeah, same.
The Federalist, and having read the Federalist Papers and known about that debate, you know, everyone thinks that the Constitution was like a tablet from on high. Mm-hmm. And the Founding Fathers saw it, and they were glad.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not how it happened at all. They called each other's names. It was scurrilous debate.
They smelled funny?
Well, they didn't bathe. And they wore wigs.
It's not a bad combo. It's hot in Philly in the summertime.
But I got to draw these guys. It's a debate in the hall. It's a debate between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The Federalists are Alexander Hamilton and James Madison. And how many times in your life are you going to be able to caricature James Madison, who is 5 foot nothing and scowled a lot?
Yeah.
I mean, he was just kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
He's a mean little guy.
Yeah, he really was.
Yeah.
And on the other side was Samuel Adams and Patrick Henry. So I got to caricature all these guys screaming at each other. I get to have... Samuel Adams has a quote that he talks about the Constitution as being monarchist, and you're going to sow these seeds, and like a canker worm, they will be devoured. And I'm going, oh, you got to come up with canker worm, right?
There's an analogy.
Canker worm. So I have a canker worm actually eat Patrick Henry in this thing. So, and then spit him out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Didn't like the Federalist Papers. They weren't going to digest all that well.
Well, and you know what a canker worm is? That's actually
I don't know.
It's what they called an inchworm. See, now you know.
Oh, and knowledge is look power. At the education you're bringing.
Yeah.
How about that? All right, so when I go into the Hamilton exhibit, where will I see your stuff?
You'll see it in the hall, the Federalist Hall, where they debate the Constitution. And the whole exhibition, you haven't been yet, right?
I have not.
It's worth going to.
I'm sure it is.
Especially if you love history. It's this totally immersive thing. You start at the beginning of Hamilton's life, and you're in St. Croix. You go through the hurricane. You immigrate to the United States. You go through all this stuff.
I mean, yeah, there's a million reasons he should have died.
Oh, yeah.
You know, way early.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Along with being a short guy.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, is there's a hall where you go to a ball. Well, that kind of rhymed.
Yeah.
And all the figures are there. Washington is there. Hamilton. And you don't realize how short Hamilton was. He's a tiny fella. And so I stood there at the exhibit during the opening, and I go, I wonder if this is the real height. And a voice from behind me said, it is. Like, oh, thank you. And so I went, after a few seconds, I go, how do you know that? And it turned out I was the producer of the play.
Oh, okay. Well, so, yeah, he's done some research.
Yeah.
And, you know, we both agreed on the fact that he was a mean little fella. He was also right about most of the things that he declared, and probably would have been a heck of a president if not for a couple of problems in his life. I'd encourage you to see the musical as well if you haven't while there's still time. But does the exhibit complement the musical, or can you see, if you haven't seen the musical, does the exhibit work?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Although, I mean, who hasn't heard the musical? I mean, it's like a
law. Well, I've heard his songs, but a lot of people still haven't seen it.
It's in the Constitution. Yeah, you have to see Hamilton. It
should be mandatory.
Yeah, free press. Yeah. See Hamilton. Yeah.
Well, we know Pence went.
But the Hamilton exhibit, the museum exhibit, is, it complements it. And if you're history, if you're at all interested in history, or you want to get your kids interested in history, I mean, it's a great way to immerse them in that, too. I mean, like the scene for the boat, the British boats filled up New York Harbor with 30,000-plus troops, British troops. The idea that you're standing there looking at the world's greatest military force is now filling up your harbor.
Yeah.
And the holy crap moment. And they capture that in a wonderful way. And it's just room after room like that.
Well, it's part of the miracle of this country, because the fact that this country survived. You know, you talk about the first year of a restaurant being tough. The first 50 years of this country, it could have gone the wrong way a bunch of times.
And the
debate, a bunch of them came in and burned the White House down.
Well, they came back. That's some unfinished business.
Right.
You know, the Federalist debate is one where you things I didn't know. Alexander Hamilton opposed the Bill of Rights. Did you know this?
I did, yeah. Oh. Yeah. But I'm a bit of a nerd like you.
Well, you're smarter than me in that sense, because I didn't know. I go, really?
Yeah.
And so you have Madison kind of tiptoeing away from that, because he knew that was a necessary a compromise they had to make. Hamilton, to his credit, his point was that we don't need it. That the Constitution as it stands gives everyone rights. As soon as you start giving people rights, you can take them away.
Here's a weird observation from that period, and I don't know if you've had it as well. If you go back and look at the founding fathers, most of them live a long life. Most of them live to be old men, and old men by today's standards. I mean, Jefferson, Adams both die on July 4th. I think they're both well into their 70s. 70s then was 112 now. And it's kind of amazing. And this has nothing to do with our conversation necessarily, but health care wasn't great. But they probably had the best doctors of the day because of who they were, right?
Not just the best doctors, but they also lived, with the exception of Adams, who is the only signer of the Declaration of Independence who did not either own or lease slaves. One guy.
I did not know that.
John Adams was it. He just on principle. So the rest of them lived lives where they didn't have to work very hard.
So they wouldn't run the risk of having a sickle cut their head off and things of that nature.
Yeah, or get scratched and get septic and
infection.
Die
of,
of a blister.
Yeah, because I think the lifespan then was about 20.
You're not far off. I think it was in the 30s.
Yeah, so it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, it is.
So it's got to be a heck of an honor, isn't it?
Oh, it's a tremendous honor. Are you kidding? Seriously, I mean, this whole project, once you get, you know, they told me what it was and who was involved, and, you know, you walk in, you're given this device, and you can point at different things, and it's narrated by
Miranda, yeah.
Thank you, Lin-Manuel Manuel, sorry, and other people who were in the lead of the original cast are doing and it's just wonderful.
And we have the guy that plays Hamilton coming in tomorrow, right?
Miguel Cervantes. Yeah. Yes, he's coming in tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Fun.
So that'll be good. And we'll explain to him that he needs to see your stuff before he sees anything else.
Yeah, my wife, to her credit, we went to the exhibit, and my wife's take on it was, they need to have people sit down. They need to close the doors, and they need to watch your stuff.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's great support at home.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's Sicilian, so I'm just telling you people, stop and watch it.
Don't mess with a Sicilian.
No.
All right, I got a couple more questions for you. Hang around. If you've got something you want to ask Scott Stantis about the business that he does and how he got into it and stuff, if I don't ask it, you should. 312-981-7200. Texters, phone calls, whatever the case may be.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I was just attacked by my headphones. You ever do that thing, Carms, where you put your headphones on and they snap you in the face?
Yep.
Oh, that hurts.
I'm lucky to be alive.
It's an embarrassing moment, and you have to question your own athletic ability, Steve.
Well, I think it was on CLTV, so I hope some people caught it.
Yeah. I didn't notice, to be
honest. Like last winter when I fell on my sidewalk, and it was so slippery, I had to butt slide my way off the patch of ice to stand up. And I'm thinking, as hard as I fell, I certainly hope the neighbors saw it.
You know, I hit myself in the face once with my headphones near my eye, and I actually had a black eye for almost a week.
And how do you explain that?
It's like, what happened?
I fought off some muggers. It turns out it's your headphones. Welcome back. Scott Stantis here from your Chicago Tribune. And we can follow you on social media, can't we?
You can, at Scott Stantis, at Scott Stantis on Twitter, and you know, Scott Stantis on Facebook, and or just go to chicagotribune.com/Stantis.
Who was the first to recognize your artistic or your smartassery when it comes to talent?
My seventh grade algebra teacher was having a parent-teacher conference with my mom and said, you know, Scott's really very talented. And my mom is like saying, well, yeah, he's okay. And now she says, no, he's very talented. He can draw. And my mom says, yes, he likes to draw. He goes, no, he did drawing in class, and he's very good. And my mom's starting to get very proud. She says, well, we think he might have a future. And that's just, no, he's very good. And she brought out the drawing I've drawn of my algebra teacher being flushed down a toilet.
that's where she appreciated it.
She did. Yeah, I think she kept it. Nice. Mrs. Sumi. I remember Mrs. Sumi.
So as a natural talent, do you get formal training?
I have... I'm laughing because I talk to high schools and colleges, and the teachers always puff up and say, so tell us about your formal education. Mm-hmm. I go, well, I was kicked out of college mm-hmm. and never really finished an art class. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But I always liked to draw. I was always a thing.
But isn't it? It's like comedy. It's like anything in life. There's two types. There's those who are gifted at it, you know, and you are. And there are those who work very hard at it. But can you learn to become a legitimate artist, or is it something within
yes,
you?
Yes. No, this drives my wife crazy because she, and I tell people, yes, anyone can draw. Being an artist is something different. That's taking an art, a skill.
Well, it's something
skill.
In your soul, too.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyone can draw. Yeah. No, I know. I mean, everyone, I know.
So there are fundamentals to it, and you can be taught
yes,
it.
Yes. I believe you can.
What about graphic art taking the place of something like what you do? Because we can do almost anything on a computer now.
Well, that, I mean, deep fake videos. Have you seen this?
Those are unbelievable.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. And memes have kind of stepped in. Editorial cartooning is sort of like Mad Magazine in a way. I hate to admit this, but they for years, Mad Magazine was, oh, my God, you can't, it's subversive. You can't read that. My goodness.
Yeah.
And now it's like the whole culture has sort of gone past Mad Magazine. It's an anachronism. And editorial cartooning with memes, kind of done the same. I mean, those serve the same purpose. Quick, fast, pithy, if they're good. You know.
That'd be a good title for a new magazine, Pithy.
Did you... that's true, Steve.
Yeah, wouldn't be bad.
Robert Crumb,
sure. Love his... Oh, I loved his work when he was... Before it was, you know, cool. Back in the 60s and 70s, yeah. I used to sneak into the... You're supposed to be 21 or older to go into the underground comic store, but they didn't really pay much attention to that, so read his work.
Now, you have personal political beliefs. How do you keep them out of your work where you draw something that states the message you want to make, even if maybe it's counter to what you believe?
Oh, I don't. I don't draw anything I don't believe. I mean, I'm not told by the Tribune that, you know, to do
But don't you have particular leanings one way or the other?
Absolutely. No, I'm a conservative. I worked in Republican politics, worked on Reagan campaigns in 80 and 84. And the only degree I actually possess is California Republican Campaign Management College.
Is that right?
That's true.
So, what'd you pay for that?
They paid me. It was fun. It was great.
So could you go out and run a campaign right now?
Could I? Nowadays it would be difficult, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There's certain skills with that, too, that
yeah, there's a skill
repeat.
Set. Yeah, and how you sell a point of view and how uh-huh. forcefully and how you get it into the people's hands. I mean,
all right, so let me shift it the other way. Are sure. there enough cartoonists doing the other side to counterbalance what you're doing?
Good Lord. For every conservative cartoonist, there's 30 liberal cartoonists.
Okay, so we need more of you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Are there any more of you out there? Or are you the only one?
There's some good ones. There's Mike Lester, who works out in Florida. There's Steve Kelly. There's Lisa Benson. So there's a handful of us. It's a small cadre. We meet in dark rooms and undisclosed locations from time to time.
Right. Secret handshakes and a knock at the door.
Yeah. Well, we usually just...
Now, I've never been more down the middle in my life. The far left and the far right are the problem. They're not the solution. And I have never hated both parties more than I have at this point for destroying the country one day at a time. But there's not a lot of me either. You know, in this business, there's either far right knuckleheads and a few far left knuckleheads.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, I'm a never Trump Republican. There's three of us
right.
left, apparently,
right.
because
right.
selling your soul apparently is what you do now if you're a Republican.
Thank you, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, yeah, that great. Yeah. I couldn't be prouder. You're right. It's hard. If you're, I'm looking at a time and now, okay. Old man alert, you know, mm-hmm. stay off my lawn.
Yeah.
But back in the day when I came up in politics, you had a Republican Party that could have a Ronald Reagan or a Barry Goldwater,
sure.
but also had a Nelson Rockefeller. Democrats by turns could have a George McGovern, but it also had a George Wallace. You know, so both parties had a pretty broad tent. Now it's so narrow, and the Democrats are moving more and more to the progressive left.
It's no good. And it's no good. It doesn't help anybody. It's not, you know, Democrats running around going socialism and thinking you're going to get elected is insane. Republicans running around saying, I can't say anything bad about the guy in the White House, no matter how nuts he is insane. And I believe that you're going to have a large portion of those 100 million who didn't vote last time come out. The question is, who are they going to vote for? Because our friend Pat Brady, I also agree with him completely, and his point is the Democrats will lose this election based on who they pick, not on whether Donald Trump is an effective candidate, if, in fact, they pick the wrong person. But right now, out of the 508 who have declared, who knows who the right person is?
You're going to watch the debates? Because that's going to be fun.
Oh, of course.
Three two-hour debates.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I want to do anything I like for three two-hour segments.
And there's no win if you're moderating a debate, because you're supposed to stay out of it, but you're supposed to ask probing questions. I don't know how those two work.
Well, and plus, how many are going to be on stage at one time? It's 11 or something like that?
Yeah, and NBC is trying to get as many moderators as possible, too. I was talking to Chuck Todd about this last week. They got 112 moderators and 58 candidates or something. Anyway, it's nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
And this is a good appearance, so whatever I was annoyed with last time, I'm done.
Oh, great.
We've made up.
Oh, is this a beautiful moment?
If we can kumbaya.
Give me a hug.
There's hope for America. Get off my lap. All right, 9:35. Let's see what's going on with Steve.
I got it. I'm patched in.
All right, let me hear it.
Now, from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
We're locked. Systems check out. Signal across the board. What's the frequency?
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
There are more lawyer jokes on the internet than there is anything else. Well, maybe not, but it's close. Personally, I love lawyers. You know what shape we'd be in without lawyers? You've got to have great lawyers in your life.
Papa Fred, great lawyer.
You're dead.
Yeah. You want that will handled? Nice little estate planning, Steve. Fred's a little bit past his prime, but he'd still take care of you.
We're going to talk, too, in just a second here. The Chicago Bar Symphony Orchestra, Neil Posner and John Fijaneski playing a piano and the clarinet. And they are, I assume, going to play in concert sometime soon. Is that accurate? Hold on. Let me get them on the air here. Hello, fellas. Are you with me? Let me try this one. Are you with me now?
Testing.
All right. I got a testing. Can you guys hear me okay? All right. We're going to work that out. And then we'll be just fine. Chicago Bar Association Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, now in its 33rd season. And the CBA Chorus celebrating its 13th year, made up of attorney members of the CBA who happen to be skilled musicians as well. Ode to Joy highlights the third time the CBSAO and the CBA Chorus have performed in the home of the CSO, having presented concerts there in 2011-2015. So it's sort of like the Olympics, Carms. Every 4 years, they come together to play.
So. See, that's a lot of pressure, Steve, right? You're practicing all this time, and then here we go, and and now showing up in the Steve Cochran Show. It's a moment right here.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah. The June 22nd concert begins at 8 o'clock at Orchestra Hall. That is 1 week from Saturday, so this Saturday.
Yeah, this Saturday.
This coming Saturday, right?
Yeah, it's only 4 days away.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's at Orchestra Hall Symphony Center on South Michigan Avenue. Marcia, have you ever heard a lawyer play a clarinet?
No, I haven't.
It's something going into a joke. A lawyer walks into a bar with a clarinet. You can get tickets at bit.ly. That's the Earl Shortening Service / Ode to Joy Orchestra Hall. We'll link all that, right? I mean, that's not a great address. Chicago Bar Association Symphony Orchestra and the Chorus, Ode to Joy. All right, Joe, give me some direction. Where are they on the control board here?
They are working on it. I might be getting an update right now.
All right, so we're going to take a break, come back, and then we're going to hear them play.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Neil Posner, John Fijaneski. Gentlemen, how's it going in the performance studio? You ready to play?
We are.
Who's playing the piano?
I am, Neil Posner.
Neil, and John, you're on the clarinet.
That's right.
Where's John Duncan and Sally Daly? Did they get called into court to get yelled at by a judge or something?
John Duncan had to get back to court.
Mm-hmm.
And Sally's right here.
Oh, Sally's with you. Well, Sally, I didn't know you were coming in. Hi.
Hi.
It's the worst impression of Sally I've ever heard.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Sure. So you guys are going to play what for us?
Well, I'm going to first play an excerpt. This is Neil, and I'm going to play an excerpt from the Schumann Piano Concerto.
Yeah, me too. I tell you what, why don't you do it?
All right.
All right, here we go on WGN. Sitting ovation.
I'll stand.
Very impressive. And I tell you what, that's especially impressive considering I just found out before the show it's his first day.
Oh.
He's never played the piano before today.
That's amazing.
So very impressive. Thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you.
And what else? Give me one more before we run out of time because I'm going to plug the show again, but you guys made your way in. You plugged in your instruments. What else?
Okay, well, John.
We have an excerpt from the Mozart Clarinet Concerto.
I'm ready for this as well on WGN.
The audience was so excited, they jumped in. Amazing. We'll come back, wrap it up in just a second, tell you more about where the CSO is happening with the Bar Association next. All right, one more time, make sure that you see the Chicago Bar Association with the CSO. And now, in the last 30 seconds, I've lost my plugs. Do you guys have the plug sheet? Michael, run in here with it or tell me yourself. I want to make sure that we make sure people have an opportunity to get tickets. We will put a link up at WGNradio.com. Joe, where else will we put a link up? Where else can people get a link?
Instagram.
Facebook. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you get Steve Cochran.
Wherever better links are sold.
ChicagoBar.org for tickets and information for the Chicago Bar Association Symphony Orchestra and Chorus Ode to Joy. I want to thank John Wisniewski, John's partner Reed Smith, and Neil Posner, partner and chair of the Policyholder Insurance Coverage Practice Group at, I'm going to mess this up, MOOC Shellist?
Yeah.
Much Shellist?
MOOC.
So thanks to both of them, and also thanks to the lovely lady who is here as well, whose name is also not in front of me.
Yep.
So, tell you what, that was flawless.
That was the best. You learn from the best.
Just
Bill.
Flawless.
Yep.
How are you guys?
Great. Go Sox.
Mooktastic.
Oh, boy. The word's not helping mean anything to you as a friend.
Is pile on your middle name?
Yep. I spend all my day trying to avoid meetings. And now?
Yep.
I'm going to leave now. And you guys are going to do a show, and I'll be listening because I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you.
Big fan.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow.